meeting. And the one item that we have to discuss is the refinancing of some city bonds and prepayment options. This is something that we've discussed previously, and in light of trying to be transparent and open rather than proceeding directly to a parameters resolution, which is the typical place in which to start this, we decided to have this town hall meeting. We've advertised it in the newsletter and asked people to respond either by coming here or otherwise by contacting us, and we really want our residents' opinion on these two items. So I guess the first place that we'd like to start would be to have Rebecca Tejero, our finance director, talk about this. We also have Mr. Mark Edminster from Lewis Young, who is our financial advisor here and can answer any questions, and then we'll see what comments we have from the public, and then based off that, then we'll be able to discuss and maybe come to some consensus this evening. We do have on the agenda tonight those parameter resolutions, which, as I mentioned, is the first really official step. It's what starts the noticing period. And so if we're considering doing it, then that would be what we would do tonight. And then Mark can talk a little bit about what happens during that period. It doesn't implement anything. It just starts the period. So, Rebecca, if you wouldn't mind starting us off.
The two bonds specifically that we're here to discuss refinancing tonight are the general obligation bond series 2005 and the utility revenue bond series 2009. These really are the only viable candidates for refunding at the moment. And we followed these and looked at these bonds pretty carefully. So if you'd like, we can take them one at a time. Council, have any preferences to which bond you hear about first?
I say we start with the PI2, and then before we do that, let me just add that what precipitated this is we have a great finance team who's always analyzing our finances, work very close with Mr. Edminster, and due to decreases in the interest rate environment macroly, and then also here at the city, our recent bond rating increase. We are now AA-, which is wonderful. It prompted us to say that let's look at these and see if there isn't a way to save taxpayers some money. So,
okay.
Why don't we start with one that we call the PI2 bond?
Okay, the pressurized irrigation number 2 bond, which I just referred to as the utility revenue bond. This bond was originally issued in 2009, and it was for $890,000, and it currently carries an interest rate of 5.99%. And the bonds go out for a few more years. Now, because of the size of the bond, they weren't publicly sold. They were purchased by Wells Fargo, who continues to hold them. And the terms of those bonds do not really allow the city to call them for early redemption. However, I have had some success going to Wells Fargo and, on behalf of other cities, and essentially just sort of begging and pleading, just can you be nice to people and refund these bonds? Wells Fargo is under no obligation to do so, but to their credit, they have they put forth a proposal that they're willing to restructure the bonds and lower the interest rate pretty dramatically. They put forth two options. One would fix the interest rate for 7 years at 3.05%, and I'm sorry, 3.08%. And the other is an option that would fix the rate for 5 years at 2.92%. So pretty dramatic come down from the 5.99. The catch, of course, is the bonds would not be fixed rate for their duration. And that exposes the city to some risk. What happens 5 or 7 years down the road, depending on which option, if you were to take any of those options? What happens down the road when that time comes and their interest rate resets? Now, Wells Fargo has proposed a formula by which you calculate at that time, and it'll be, I think, the Federal Home Loan Bank of Seattle plus so many percentage points. But the question is, what's going to happen years down the road? Well, at that time, will the interest rate be even higher than 5.99%? And that's a real risk. Now, the advantage to doing this, and normally I would never counsel a client to refinance a bond when you can't predict with absolute certainty out until its final maturity what your interest costs are going to be, what the interest rate is going to be. However, in this case, it might be worth considering simply because what Wells Fargo has done, remember, on your current bonds, you really can't call them. There's some very onerous call restrictions that prevent that. Out of the goodness of their heart, they're saying, okay, well, they can restructure the bonds, and as a little added bonus, we will make these bonds so that you can call them anytime you want. In other words, you can close on the refinancing, and the very next day go out and refinance them again. There's nothing to stop the city from refinancing. So I think you have to kind of look at what level of risk might you be willing to accept in order to get some savings. Your savings, if you did the 7-year option, which I think is probably the more reasonable approach, given that the difference in locking a rate for 5 years versus locking it for 7 years is not very dramatic. The difference in savings is not great, but you get your lock for 2 more years. So if you were to lock the rate for 7 years, depending on how the bonds are structured, either you could take the savings all up front, or you could sort of spread it out over time, and we're happy to look at either scenario. If you spread it out just in the period in which the rate is locked, the city's going to save about $13,500, give or take, every year. It varies a little bit. But that's your approximate annual savings. Now, should the city decide that you wanted to call the bonds prior to their maturity, either to refinance them because you think rates are going up, which you have the option to do, or if you had some revenues you wanted to devote to just simply paying down the debt, you can call the bonds without any penalty. So it is a pretty flexible structure, and it is something that Wells Fargo is not obligated to do. They first came up with this offer back in February, so that their original letter was a little bit stale, but I've since talked to them and I got confirmation today that they're willing to extend it on those same terms. So I'd be happy to answer any questions about it. Or questions from the audience if you would like me to.
Is there anyone here that would like to ask any questions? Cliff's always full of questions. Yes?
What's the outstanding balance?
Let's see. On those bonds, it is about $845,000.
One thing about this bond, just a little more history for everyone, is our original pressurized irrigation system was really installed from two sources, the primary being the PI1 bond, which is quite a bit larger than this, and then some of the infrastructure was also installed by developers in certain subdivisions like in Forest Creek. This was, PI2 bond was from, if some of you remember during, was it 07-08 in the summers when we had some water shortages, our ability to deliver capacity, and so this added capacity to the pumping and removed those shortages. And so that's what this was about and why we had this bond. I would add, just so everyone knows where my preference is, I know that there's been some discussion already, but I think that it's a little bit risky to be out there with a variable amount. That scares me a little bit just because you don't know where they're going to be at. Historically, we're at a really low rate. You're not going to go any lower, and the question is when are you going to go higher?
Unlikely.
But in reviewing it, there is the possibility that we could accelerate the payment. Do you remember what that amount was, Becky, on the 7-year plan to accelerate the payment, or Mark?
I can calculate it. I ran the calculations out. to match the life of the current bond, but I can use it.
Yeah. And so the way that I would suggest that we look at this is we just completed a utility rate study that looked at our rates, and if we were to summarize what that rate study said, it basically said that our finance department's done a great job making sure that the cost of services are represented in what we charge for those services, which is what it should be, a pass-through. And they recommended some gradual changes to keep up largely with inflation over time. We could go ahead and have a minor increase to our PI rates, pay this bond off in 7 years instead of the remaining term, and then not have that interest rate fluctuation at force. And then at that point in time, our debt service would decrease by the amount of our current payment, and so we would accomplish the same thing as if we just went with the rate study increase, and yet the future reserves would be for improvement actually when we need it. And right now we're getting rid of debt when we have money saved up for doing it. So that's where I fall out. I know that a fee is a tax, and I know that some people are sensitive to, but I also believe that if there's a time in which we can really cut our rate in half and use those interest rate savings to pay this off early, then I think that that's in our best interest. I'd like for us to be able to get some of these growth-oriented bonds because we grew so quick off of our books, and so that's where my preference is. That is, if you have something unpleasant, deal with it and get it done.
It's very much like prepaying your mortgage or paying extra on your mortgage so you retire sooner. You really save an awful lot on the interest cost. And so you're correct. If there's no other questions on that bond, before I turn to the general obligation bond, may I address for a moment, Mayor, what you alluded to about what exactly the happens when you adopt a parameters resolution.
Yes,
I think that's very important to understand in the context of both bonds. A parameters resolution, which is what's before the council to be considered tonight, is really, just as the mayor suggested, it's simply a starting point. It allows the city to move forward with the legal processes of issuing a bond, but it in no way obligates the council to issue bonds. Not tonight, if you were to adopt it, and not in the future. If and when the decision is made to issue bonds, that has to come before the council again for additional action. So all this does is sort of set the wheels in motion, but at no point does it obligate the city to do anything. So if, let's say, interest rates suddenly moved against us and savings disappeared, or Wells Fargo withdrew their offer or modified it to some extent that you couldn't live with, then you're under no obligation to pursue it. So all it does is provide for publication of a notice of intent to issue bonds, which basically is just putting the public on notice that the city is thinking about issuing bonds. That's it. Since these are refunding issues, there would not be, strictly speaking, there wouldn't be the need for a public hearing. There's no requirement for one, but you'd certainly be free to hold them if you so chose.
And I think that's been our tendency to be very open in this process,
yes.
And so we'd probably go through that step even though it's not required, just like this meeting is not required, but something that we're trying to do in the spirit of transparency. So,
Once you publish the notice of bonds to be issued, that triggers a 30-day public contestability period, during which time the city cannot issue the bonds. So even under the best of circumstances, you couldn't issue the bonds for probably 45 to 60 days in a best-case scenario. Eric's very good, but we can't get around the law.
Nowhere do we want to.
Nowhere do you want to.
Mark?
Yes, sir.
Just a couple questions. If we go down the road in terms of analyzing more whether we want to do this, I understand that there's no obligation on the part of the city to move if interest rates go against us or the terms change. However, is there any out-of-pocket costs associated with just going down the road? Even though we may not go through with it, is there any legal costs or is there any cost to Lewis Young that the city would incur?
There's no cost on our part if you don't issue the bond. I mean, I can't speak for every service provider. Certainly in the case of PI2 bonds, where really the only costs you'd incur are Lewis Young's cost, bond council cost, and Wells Fargo cost. If you did not issue the bonds, I don't believe there'd be any cost on Wells Fargo's part, since they're really viewing it as they're doing you a favor, and if you said no, you're not interested, they're fine with that too. They'll keep the 5.99% rate happily.
Yeah.
I do have one more question for you. But Eric, along those lines, are there some legal costs that the city would incur from Blaisdell Church? No? Okay. Then my next question is about the savings. And so I just kind of eyeballed it. It looked like there would be total savings around $85,000 or so. Is that correct? Over 7 years, $13,005 a year.
Right, in the first, yes, in the first few years, that's correct.
Okay.
And that's net of any cost of issuance.
So let's say, just hypothetically speaking, that the city wanted to take all of that savings up front. Could you turn around and use that savings to pay down your debt immediately?
Could you use that, the savings, I'm trying to understand the question, could you use that to in turn call some of those bonds?
Sure. I mean, I guess you can phrase it that way, but tell me a little bit about how this savings comes. $13,005 a year for 7 years, or roughly $85,000 over, and you said you could do it over time or all up front. So how does that savings actually take place?
The savings comes because of money you won't have to budget to pay the debt service.
Okay, so it isn't like a lump sum back to the state.
No, it's not cash that comes back. The only time you'd see something like that is if the bond had a debt service reserve fund that would be released to you. And the 2009 bonds do not.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions for the council? Audience?
Okay, the one everyone's waited for is the general obligation bond. This one gets a little more complicated because the general obligation bond was issued and sold in the public markets. And when you do that, most bonds, and these are no exception, were sold with a call protection for 10 years, which means that the people that bought these bonds want some assurance that the day after they buy them, they won't be called away from them, prepaid. So for 10 years, the city is barred from prepaying those bonds. The call date on those bonds is in 2016. So from the bondholder standpoint, you cannot redeem the bonds before 2016. Now, that said, there are ways to get around that. Not from the bondholder's point of view, but you can do what's called an advance refunding, where you sell the bonds now, put a certain amount of money into an escrow account that's calculated to kick off money in the amount that will pay the old bond debt service up until the call date, and then it pays the remaining bonds. So at the time you do that, it's called defeasing the bonds. When the city has defeased the bonds, they're no longer an obligation of the city. Everything that bondholders can look to is held in that escrow account. It sounds really good in theory. Here's where it kind of breaks down a little bit, why it gets a little problematic. When you're only allowed to invest the monies in the escrow account in a very narrowly restricted set of securities, and the IRS regulations are quite specific what you can invest it in. And the problem comes because what you're allowed to invest that money in the escrow in doesn't earn a very high rate of return. In fact, it makes the state treasurer's pool look pretty darn lucrative. What's the state treasurer's pool right now? About 7.75, if that. I'm very comfortable saying it's less than 1% is what you're earning on the state treasurer's pool. Well, what you're allowed to invest it in this escrow to refund the bonds is set by the Treasury Department, and it changes every day with Treasury bill markets. And so if you cannot invest the monies that you put away into the escrow, let's hypothetical example, let's say you borrow money, you sell bonds at 4%, your cost on your new money is 4%, and you turn around and you put that into the escrow, and you're only allowed to earn something like
0%?
Well, pretty darn close.
Yeah.
Since you're not going to have much in the way of earnings coming out of the escrow, that means you have to put more principal into it. And to the extent that the escrow is inefficient, in that it doesn't earn at the rate at which you borrowed, that's called negative arbitrage. And negative arbitrage, in this instance, is very significant. It's a pretty high number. If you were to do the bond refundings on the GEO bond immediately, you would have to sell bonds, and I did the pricing on this today, just so we have a good scale. You'd have to sell $4,770,000 worth of bonds. Your net present value savings from the refunding would be a little under $128,000, which sounds pretty good. Well, your negative arbitrage, on the other hand, is $423,700. Negative arbitrage, a way to look at it, think about it, is if this escrow were perfectly efficient, if you could borrow at 4% and invest it at 4%, your savings would not only be the $127,866, but also the $423,668. So you can see negative arbitrage is a real drag. The nice thing about negative arbitrage is the longer you wait, the closer you get to the time when the bonds can be called, the lower it just goes away by process of time. And so I ran a second scenario where I said, okay, what happens if using everything exactly the same as closing immediately on the bonds, you postponed it 5 months. What is the effect of just waiting 5 months? Well, your par amount of your bonds sold goes down to $4,705,000. You're borrowing $65,000 less. Your net present value savings go to $170,420, so they've gone up by $42,500 change. And your negative arbitrage has gone down to $386,659. So you save $37,000 in negative arbitrage for doing nothing more than simply waiting 5 months. And now, of course, that assumes that the interest rates that you might get today are the same as what you might get in 5 months. Yes, there is some risk that if interest rates go up, your savings will, of course, go down. But the nice thing about waiting in a negative arbitrage situation is that money you know is going to go away. That money you know you're going to get. Whereas, you can tolerate some rise in interest rates from waiting because your negative arbitrage is going
to go up.
To some extent, they offset each other, right? So
it's just a short-term, long-term yield curve.
Right? Yeah. The question is, how long do you want to wait and capture more of that negative arbitrage before you finally pull the trigger? At what point do you think interest rates might rise? 6 months from now? A year from now? Unfortunately, I don't know. But I think the best guess and the best estimates we've seen from experts, and Gary and I have talked about this extensively, is we don't believe that interest rates are going to change substantially before the election. Nobody really has any incentive to drive them up before the election. So we know we've at least got that much time. And, possibly in the next year, then it becomes a little hazier as to what's going to happen. Our crystal ball is not quite as good that far out. So while I certainly endorse the idea of laying the groundwork to start on a refunding and be ready for it when and if you decide to pull the trigger, right now I'd have to say that the negative arbitrage is so great and the potential to increase your savings is so great for waiting that that's my advice. But starting the process now is good because it just saves you having to do it down the road. If suddenly things are such that you decide you want to issue the bond, you won't have to publish the notice, you won't have to go through the 30-day contestability period, documents will all be ready and waiting, and you just move on it immediately. So it really gives the city a degree of flexibility.
Is it a 12-month that parameters resolution is good for? What?
There's nothing specific in the law. I maintain that if it begins to expire in my mind somewhere 18 to 24 months out.
Okay.
So it's good for at least 12, 18, yes, and then you start thinking maybe on the schedule.
I've seen it in print for 18 months. Anything other than, if it's not specified, I think generally in the industry, we sort of go by a year, give or take, before it gets stale and maybe ought to relook at it.
Okay.
So I have a couple questions, kind of going along the lines of what Gary talked about earlier. If we were to do this 5 months from now, what is the total savings to the residents, and can that savings be realized up front, or does it have to be distributed over the period of the bond?
On a general obligation bond, it's a little different than other kinds of bonds because any savings that the city realizes ultimately belong to the taxpayer. You can't levy a tax rate in excess of what it costs you for debt service on the bonds. Now, there's an argument that you could structure the bond such that the savings is essentially level over the whole term of the bonds, in which case you simply lower the property tax assessment for everybody. I haven't worked out how much that would equate to. because I have to look up the taxable value of the city, and it's not a difficult calculation. I just haven't done it today.
Sure. Or could you front load it and say,
You can front load it.
1 year, we're going to reduce the tax burden to the taxpayers by 50% or whatever it is.
$65.
Lower by whatever that is.
Roughly $65. If you put it per resident, yeah. If you did it all on year one.
If, on the other hand, you elected to structure the new bonds such that in your very first year you had a very low debt service payment.
So that's if you did it now, by the way.
Yeah, if you did it now, such that what you have already levied and collected, would the city be able to keep it? I don't think the law is clear on that point. Eric?
Would the city be able to keep
any savings in the first year? If the bonds were refunded, but the tax for it had already been levied.
So in other words, could you pay down principal instead of refunding? If there's a $128,000 savings, if you do it now, could you take the $128,000 off the principal instead of taking $120,000 off of the debt service to residents?
Well, if you end up with an extra $120,000 in the city, then you just use that and apply it to the next year,
you
reduce it the next year.
But you're not going to reduce the principal. It's going to come off the payment, the tax collection.
At some point, yeah, one way or another, it comes off taxes. And so by doing this, you are reducing the taxes in the city. You're not bringing in any additional money to the city to spend elsewhere. This is merely a vote to reduce taxes.
That's why a general obligation refunding is a little different than other bonds. If you had, say, a revenue bond off a sewer or water system, and you refinance that and save money, well, that's money in the city's pocket. Whereas the general obligation bond really is not quite the same.
Okay. And my recollection was this is something you can do once. So we have the option to do it now, but you couldn't do it again in 3 years during that call period.
Well, right? the rule is that a bond refunding, if it's done in advance of what's called an advance refunding.
Yep.
In advance of the call date. Federal regulations say you get one shot at that. It used to be you could refund bonds all day long. And then years ago, the Feds came in and said, no, you can only do it once in advance. Now, if the call date has been reached, what's called a current call, you can do that as many times as you want.
Yeah, but you can only defeat it once with advance
refunding. You can only do an advance refunding one time. So you certainly want to save your power until you've got a good shot.
Okay. Scott, do you have more questions? Gary, Jenny, Fred, the audience, any questions? I think this is a little bit harder one because doing it today isn't a huge dollar amount. There's some risk of if you do it today, what happens in the future. I think that's more minimal simply because rates probably aren't going to go down, but there does seem to be something of maybe waiting 5 months. But as Mark said and Eric said, I believe that maybe going ahead and parameters resolution gives us the ability to keep our eye on that instead of having to start at square one if we decide to do that. So if you're looking 5 months out, you're talking about $170,000, and I believe our debt service is right around $370,000, depending on which series it is, then that's a pretty good chunk. You know, when you put in dollar figures, you know, $80, some people might say that's not a lot, but that's going to be a third or so reduction. What is that, 170 out of 370, one time on the GEO bond payment, and that would be worth it, in my opinion. So I don't know what your guys' thoughts are, but that's what I would lean towards, is doing the parameter resolution on that, keep an eye on it, probably not doing it until that five-month out date where you get to the $170,000 savings.
And that's assuming all the conditions are the same 5 months from now as they are today. They could get better.
Could get worse. But
yeah, they could. But at the very least, you know by waiting, at the very least, you've burned off some of the negative arbitrage. Yep. And that can offset, to some degree, the risk of waiting. Yep.
Okay. Any other discussion on that?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Staff have any recommendations there? David, Becky, Eric?
There's no downside on either of these resolutions enacting tonight and approving, because this is merely to give public notice that you're thinking about it and to invite input from the public, and then you'll actually make the decision at a later date on both bonds. And so there's no downside to moving forward at this step.
All right. Well, if there aren't any other issues for this town hall meeting on the debt refinance, we'll go ahead and close the work session. We plan on starting in at 7 o'clock with our council meeting, so we'll go ahead and take a break. Thank you.